streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Roy and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back.
Good evening, and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes. As we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight, so stay tuned in to the hottest radio show worldwide.
Hey, hey, ladies and gentlemen, you already know what it is. Streets Don't Love You Back is definitely in the building worldwide, and we got a great, great guest for you tonight. It's my little homeboy, Simp, in the building with us, and he's going to bring some great knowledge to the table and let you brothers and sisters understand why the streets definitely don't love you back, you know? So without further ado, we're going to bring my main man on the line. What's good in the building, Simp?
Hey, what's up? What's up, man? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, man, you already know this day was coming, man, you know? I'm going to get right to it, man. I would definitely like for you to tell the viewers how it all started, man, with your nightmare of 21 years. How did it all get started?
Well, actually, I got involved in drugs probably at a real young age, like around 13 and 14. And then by the time I was 16, I started selling. And I was really like a street dude because I was out in the suburbs, and I was more on like a Grateful Dead type of tip. But I started selling LSD and marijuana. And at age 16, I was just kind of supplying to me and my friends in high school. And by the time I was 19, I was supplying LSD and marijuana to 15 colleges in 5 states.
My man. Now, you out there, you're doing your thing. And I know about the Grateful Dead thing because a lot of people, man, was following the Grateful Dead back in the day. And they still do, you know what I mean? Great band, you know? And you out there doing your thing. Everybody's getting high, spending money, calling you up. How did the hammer come down, man, after you enjoying money and chilling? How did the hammer come down?
Well, I was out there basically doing my thing, selling at a whole bunch of different colleges. And what happened in my case is they had one big bust at University of Virginia. They busted a frat for selling drugs. And everybody knew my name because my first name was Seth, but not everybody knew my last name, you know, Ferrante. But Seth back then, Seth now, you know, 20 years later, is a lot more common name. You see a lot of actors and stuff with it. We're talking back in the late 80s. There wasn't a lot of dudes named Seth. So they kept hearing my name. The feds, they were doing an investigation in this one bus, DEA and stuff, and they were trying to figure out, who's this dude Seth? So they had one indictment, and then they had another indictment. Actually, mine was the third indictment where they finally got me because the dudes were just going like dominoes. As soon as they got busted, the feds would come in, and, you know, dudes were rolling. I'm not going to blame them. I'm not going to point fingers or say this or that. You know, that's what it was back then. Dudes did what they felt they needed to do. I didn't necessarily agree with it because it led to me, but in all eventuality and reality, I was doing wrong and behind it. I was doing stuff that I shouldn't have been doing. And even though it ended up, I got 25 years at 22, ended up having to do 21. I can say maybe I shouldn't have done all that time. It was wrong that I did all that time, but I deserve to do time. But, you know, I broke the law and I got caught. So, but 21 years in prison was a little bit too much, but I made the best of my situation and started doing a lot of stuff in prison so that I just didn't become a statistic and come back out here so I would recidivate and do all types of stuff like that.
My man. So now, Sam, you done got caught, you know, and they finna sentence you So now we at the sentence date. When they sentenced you to that 25 years, man, how did you feel inside, man, when they told you 25?
Well, actually, I took off first. You know, I was a fugitive for like 2 years. So I knew it was coming down.
Wow.
Yeah, I knew it was coming down, and I didn't really want to face it, so I took off. So my case was like 91. Yeah, my case was like 91. I had a little bit of money, and I had a little bit of connections, and I was only 20 years old, and I just couldn't see myself to go into jail. It just wasn't in the cards for me at that time. So I actually took off, and I kept selling marijuana and transporting marijuana and smuggling marijuana for about 2 more years. And I finally got caught in 1993, and then I got sent back to Virginia in the feds, and they sentenced me. And really, when I got sentenced, in the feds, they don't sentence you by years. They sentence you by months.
Oh, okay.
So,
they gave you the month.
Yeah, so when I got sentenced to 304 months. And I had to kind of think about it. I had to think about it for a minute because I was like, 304 months? And then I'm still standing there because I'm still a kid. I'm only 22. And I'm standing there in front of the judge. And, you know, when you go in the courtroom, they take your handcuffs and everything off. But I was still in the you know, I think it was County Greens or whatever, something like that, for the county I was in the little jumpsuits. And I'm standing there, you know, I'm kind of looking at my parents and looking at the other people in the courtroom, and my lawyers are there, and they're trying to act like something good is going on because I paid them a lot of money and my parents paid them a lot of money. But really, I'm sitting there getting screwed. And that's where the judge kind of handed down a sentence, and he was like, 304 months. And I was like, 304 months. And I was just kind of in shock. And then when I was going in the van back to the county jail from the courthouse, and I was thinking, 304 months. And I was like, man, I added up in my head, and I'm like, that's like 25 years and 4 months. I was like,
damn.
I mean, it was just, yeah, it was just crazy. I mean, I was 22 years old, so I would say probably.
Your mind is shot. Your mind is shot
yeah.
at the time when it sunk in.
I would say my first 9 years in prison, I was still kind of amazed and in shock that I could actually receive that amount of time, because I didn't kill anybody. I was a first-time nonviolent offender. I sold LSD and marijuana. Not to say that that wasn't wrong and I shouldn't have been doing that, because now as an older man, I know better than to do stuff like that, even though marijuana is legal in a lot of places. But I just, you know, I didn't really care. I kind of went off thin. I didn't care about myself. I didn't care about anybody else. That's why I got myself involved in that situation. That's why I was using a lot of drugs, tripping on LSD all the time, and smoking weed. I mean, I didn't care about myself. I didn't care about my family. I definitely didn't care about society. And even when I got that time and I went to prison, I was just angry. And my first 9 years in prison, I can say I was kind of in shock looking back now. I was kind of in shock at the sentence that I received. But also, I mean, I was angry, and I had that, you know, like a lot of dudes in the street when you're young and coming up, why we do the things we do is because we don't care. We act like we care about getting money, or we act like we care about this or that or material things, but really we don't care, because if we really cared, we wouldn't continue to put ourselves in these dangerous situations where we can get shot or killed, where we're bringing drugs to our communities, and where, you know, it's a dog-eat-dog world. You know, people can be your best friend, and then they can snitch you out. It doesn't matter. They're going to do what they got to do, and they're going to justify it. So looking back now as a 44-year-old man, I got a lot of perspective. But at the time, I was in shock. I was angry. I was numb. I didn't really care. I continued to abuse drugs my first 9 years in prison, whatever I could find. And being in the prison world, I wanted to be a tough guy. You know, I wanted to be one of the most respected dudes on the compound. I continued to bring drugs and smuggle drugs into the penitentiary and make different moves, and I was still living that lifestyle. It took me a real long time to finally get a clue and be like, you know, what am I doing? This, even though I was already in prison, but I could have got more time, or I could have ended up getting killed or stabbed or having to stab somebody or something like that because of the situations I kept putting myself in.
Wow. And, you know, with you saying that, bro, a lot of people don't understand out here that's never been to the joint that no matter if you're in the penitentiary or you're in the county jail or you're in the camp or whatever, there are many drugs in the game inside the walls. You know what I mean? So enlighten these people out here, man, that you don't just go there and chill out because you do drugs on the street. You can go right in there and do drugs. Enlighten them a little bit, Sam.
Yeah, they got everything. They got heroin. I mean, a lot of marijuana. The last joint I was at when I just came out in last August, about a year ago, the biggest thing going around, I was in FCC4 city in Arkansas. The biggest thing was the K2, the synthetic marijuana. You know, they call it Tucci. That stuff was everywhere. The compound was flooded with it because everybody was bringing that in because you can beat the piss test because they could smoke it and you could take your analysis and you're not going to get a dirty urine. So everybody, the compounds, and that's what I've heard from dudes, a lot of the compounds now, they're flooded with K2. Because even if you get busted with a K2, they treat it like tobacco, which is like a 300 series shot, rather than like marijuana or heroin, which is like a more severe shot, like a 100 series shot. But the drugs are coming in, man. They're throwing it over the fence. They're putting in racquetballs, footballs, basketballs. It's coming in the visiting room. Guys are swallowing balloons. The COs are bringing it in. They even got drones bringing it in now. And a lot of dudes, like the last couple of joints I was at the last 5 years, a lot of dudes, they got cell phones. They're coordinating stuff. They got real intricate type of organizations to get whatever they want in, tobacco, cell phones, any type of drugs. So I always equated the prison world. It's just like out here. It's just you got certain restrictions and certain things. It's like a microcosm of society, just on a lot smaller level. You know, you get small amounts of everything. Everything is more expensive. And then being in prison, it's all men and the guards, and you got to put up with the politics and all the gangs and the geographical and territorial beefs. You know, dudes have different cars and the way they move and they set down rules. This is what you can't do. This is what you can't do. This is who you can associate with. This is who you can't associate with. Growing up as a young man in my 20s, like I said, my first 9 years, I was really into that prison environment, and I wanted to be a tough guy. But I just had this conversation with a really good friend of mine who lives in Pennsylvania the other day. It was a dude that I did a lot of time with. We were in two different joints together. We did about 6 years together, and we used to work out all the time. And like when we were in, we thought, you know, because he was like a blood, he was like a blood dude on the street and a blood dude in prison. And, you know, I used to hang out with him, and we thought we were real tough, man. And, you know, we would check dudes in and do different stuff like this. And now this dude, he's been out a couple years, and he's working at a grocery store, and they just recently made him manager, and he has a kid, he got married. He's about to buy his first house. And we're just talking, and we're like, man, can you believe, like, how stupid we were, like, all that prison stuff that we just used to eat up and push on people and, you know, push that agenda. And we're like, man, we just both agreed. We were like, man, all that stuff is all some BS, man. And we couldn't even believe that we were all into that. But at the time when you're going through it, you know, even like when you're in the streets, I mean, if you want to be successful in the streets or you want to thrive in the streets or the drug game, there's a certain way you have to be in it. And if you decide to be in that business, you adapt to it. And it's the same when you go to prison. So, I mean, I'm not the type of dude. I'm not no sucker dude. No dude's going to take stuff from me or take advantage of me or nothing. So when I was in that situation in prison, I had to be a certain way to get the respect of my peers and even the admiration of my peers so that I could live comfortably. But now that I'm back out in society, you know, I see a lot of the ways that I was living, a lot of the ways that I was thinking, a lot of the mentalities that I had. It's just, you know, it's some BS, really. I mean, I'm going to say it straight. And any dudes that get out of prison and they still got those mentalities or they hold to those values, all they're going to do, they're going to return to the criminal life and they're going to go back to prison. I mean, it's that simple. Or, you know, They're gonna die in the streets because if they go out there now, you got all these young kids getting younger and younger every year, and they don't care. They'll shoot you. They don't care if you're the big OG, if you're the big homie, if you did 20 years in prison. you know, they'll blast you, you know, just for the points. And that's all it is, man. So, yeah.
Yeah.
As a young man, go ahead.
I'm going to ask you this question. When did you hear about me when you had your people reach out and buy my book in 2010 and send it to you? How did you hear about me?
Well, I was in Loretto, Pennsylvania, and I've been mostly East Coast hills, like West Virginia, Fairton, and stuff like that. So there's a lot of Detroit dudes. So when you're in the penitentiary and you're talking to different dudes, and they talk about different dudes from the streets, you know, different dudes that had names, different dudes that were getting money. And actually, I was with when I was in Loretto, I was with a dude named Reginald Dancy, Big Reg, who Puritan Avenue Boys, you know, T. Stuckey. And I think he had your book or something, and he was like, oh, this is my homeboy. Pretty familiar with a lot of the different legends from Detroit, you know, because I heard the guys talk about them all. And then, you know, I heard the dudes talk about you, so I decided to get the book when dude brought it to my attention and showed me that there was a book out. I always like to read that type of stuff, gangster stuff anyhow. Like, I was into the mafia stuff, the Colombian cocaine cartel stuff, and then eventually, you know, all the crack era type stuff.
My man, you know, and you know, for the record, to let people know, ever since Sepp had bought my book, me and him had stayed in touch, you know what I mean? He used to write, I used to write, and when he stepped down, you know, he got right in touch with me, and we've been jammed ever since, you know? So I just want to give a big ups to you, man, for always keeping it real, even when you was behind the walls, and now that you're home, you're keeping it 100 as well, man. What advice would you give these young kids out here, big boy?
I would just say, look, I'm going to say the same thing what my parents and older people told me. And when I was young, I thought it was some BS. I was like, man, that's some BS. But what they told me, they said, stay in school, get an education. But looking at it now, you know, back then I was about the fast life. I was about the fast money. So I was like, why am I going to go to school and waste all this time going to school when I can make 20, 30 grand a month easy right now when I'm 17, 18 years old? You know, and they're only making whatever, 60, 100 grand a year. I'm like, man, I can make, my parents were upper middle class, but, you know, they're making maybe 150,000. I'm like, man, I can make that in 5 or 6 months, and I can make it cash. I don't have to pay any taxes or anything. But I made that fast money. But really, in reality, it was short money because I only did it for 3 years. Then I went to prison for 21 years. So I didn't have any earning power for 21 years. So all those people that we want to say were squares or this or stayed in school and got out and had a career, now if you look at that longevity and all the time they've been working, they got the houses. They got the nice cars. They're sending their kids to nice schools, buying them stuff. They're sending their kids to college. Why? Because they worked hard. And they didn't get the fast money or the quick rewards. They put in the time and the effort, you know, and now really talk about long money. They're the ones that have the long money. My parents are 70-something years old, and they retired like 10 years ago, and they're still living the life because of all the hard work that they put in. Where I'm getting out here,
man.
I'm 44. Yeah, I'm 44. I got to scramble. I got to, you know, try to find jobs and different stuff for this. You know, luckily – I developed my talent as a writer, and I got books, and I got some type of, you know, means of income and means of support. But if not,
yes,
you know, I'd be working at a restaurant somewhere as a line cook, starting from ground zero.
Right, but you, like you said, you put yourself in position after you went through your, you know, your setting for 9 years. You know, after that, you was like, let me get this shit right, you know, and you start gradually making that change, and now that you home, that change paid it off, because like you say, you're a writer, you got books, you got different things that you do to bring money in, and you bring money in the legal way now, and not something you got to look over your head about. So that's a great point for our listeners to take away from the table from my man tonight, you know. And one other thing I want to ask you before we leave, we got like 10 more minutes. And I want to touch up on a subject that's very, very leaning out here right now, you know? When I say the name, White Boy Rick, what comes to your mind?
I mean, White Boy Rick, he's a Detroit street legend, an icon from the streets. I mean, there's also a negative connotation to his name because a lot of people are going to say he's a rat or he's a snitch. But I look at it like this. I mean, I'm the type of person, I had a bunch of people snitched on me, man. The dudes on my co-defense on my case, I think they did like between 2 and 8 years. I'm the only one that got slammed with 25 years. So if anybody is going to be mad with a snitch or a rat, it should be a dude like me. And for a long time, I really had that mentality. I was like, okay, like a snitch or a rat, that's the lowest type of person. I would never do anything like that. So I held myself above them. But that was really the prison or the criminal mentality. I mean, I've been in contact with White Boy Rick probably since around 2006. I was in contact with him, you know, because I wanted to write his story because his story hadn't really been told and there were so many different conflicting myths and legends about him. So I wanted to try to get the real story right from him. But as I've, you know, developed a relationship with him and talked to him more and more of his stories come out, and I see it like now. I mean, they still got this dude in prison 28 years later. And, I mean, I think they need to let the dude out because, I mean, they got dudes, they got rapists, child molesters, all types of dudes that they're going to do 5 years. And they got this dude in just because, if you want to say what he really did, he snitched on police corruption in Detroit. He snitched on police that were doing all types of stuff. I mean, he probably told about more stuff than that. I don't know if he ever testified in anybody's trial or anything like that, but everybody that was involved with that crack era that's not dead, because, you know, a lot of dudes are obviously dead, you know, because they were in the gangster stuff and stuff like that, but everybody else is basically out except for this dude. He's still in prison, and I'm like, man, this dude was like basically almost not a first time, but he was a nonviolent offender. He got caught with 8 kilos. And really, as it comes out now, they said that the police brought him into it as an informant when he was like 14. So, I mean, I'm not going to judge. Just like if you see like a 13 or 14 or 15-year-old kid and he shoots somebody or he kills somebody and he's a juvenile, so then, you know, they give him a chance again when he gets in his 20s to come out. Same thing with White Boy Rick, man. I'm not going to blame him. I'm not going to hold against him for what he allegedly did when the DEA and the cops brought him into this life when he was 14. I mean, he was a kid, man. He didn't know no better. Maybe he thought he was playing like Spy or Mission Impossible, or he got a thrill off it. I don't know exactly. You know, I can't speak for him. That's for him to speak for himself. But I think it's a real messed up situation that they still got him in jail 28 years later for basically 8 kilos of cocaine, and they're holding it against him because he told on the police and, you know, it was one of the biggest police corruption cases in the early 90s in the country at that time.
Right, right. Well, I'm really glad that you spoke on that, Seth, and you also did an article on him as well, and I just hope people get truly educated about the whole case, you know. Just like you said, you know, for years, you know, me and a lot of homeboys out the city, as you know, was mad at him for a lot of years, you know what I'm saying? But like you said, everybody's older now, you know what I mean? In the beginning, everybody thought, okay, he told on the courage, he told on the best friends and a couple other cats, this and that. But we found out the game was way bigger than that, you know what I mean? It was all the police corruption. It was all the, you know, things that was going on, you know what I mean, behind the scenes, you know. And then when it all started coming out, everybody started running, you know what I mean? Like, oh, he lying, this, that, and the other. But it's all on the flow now, you know what I mean? Almost 30 years later, it's on the flow. Yeah, Rick worked for them people from the time he was 14, but then he left them. And then that's when they got mad at him again. So it's a whole big segment, man. So I'm really truly glad that this whole case is truly coming out about his whole situation. And it ain't about, like I said, he told on the homeboys. It's about that police corruption shit that went down, you know what I mean? And they was extorting cats in the city and robbing cats. a lot of that shit was going on in the early 80s. You dig what I'm saying? And, you know, so I'm glad it's all coming out, man. And, you know, I hope he get out as well. And, you know, he's be able to educate kids, man, not to even work with that shit, man. You know what I mean? If you got a case, go ahead and do your time, because he going to educate you. You deal with them, they throw your ass to the curb. So you might as well just do your time. So his story is compelling to educate other people, you know?
And it goes back to the whole thing I was talking about earlier. If you're a criminal, or if you're a convict and you're doing life, or if you're a criminal and you're in the game in the street, there's certain codes that you got to live by, be it unspoken or not spoken, and you're not supposed to betray your brother or your comrade or anything like that. And I'm a firm believer in that. But at the same time, a lot of people got the game messed up, because they're going to say, if your grandma who lives down the street, if she calls the police on the dudes hustling on the corner, they're going to, in the street nowadays, it seems like they're going to say, oh, she's a snitch. No, she's not a snitch. She's a normal citizen. She's a witness. That's what normal witnesses do. That's what normal people do. They're not in the game. They have no vested interest in the selling of drugs. So how can they be a snitch? It's like the same thing I tell people all the time. Look, if I see a dude drive down my street and hit a little kid, of course I'm going to write his license plate down and I'm going to tell the cops.
Exactly.
You know, I'm not a snitch. I don't have no vested interest in what he's doing, committing a crime with him. Yeah, I'm a witness to a thing. I'm a witness to a tragic event, you know, and that dude should be held accountable. Same thing like if a serial killer or something lives next door to me and I see him throwing away bodies, of course I'm going to call the police. These dudes always crying snitch or crying that, but as soon as their house or their car gets broken into, who do they call?
They ask you, did you see anybody?
No, they're going to call the police. As soon as their house gets broken into, their car, they're going to call the police. But then they're talking about the next man. Oh, you're a snitch, you're this, you're that. So people really got to mess up what a snitch is and what a snitch isn't.
Bottom line, you know. So tonight, we just want to enlighten you on a lot of things. And I think my homeboy Simp done enlighten you on a few great things and something that you can sleep on and get educated on, you know. And if you're out there trying to sell drugs, and if you're out there trying to be a gangbanger, we want you to take the white boy Rick case, and we want you to get educated on that, because that is what happened when you do wrong, and that is what happened when you affiliate with them people. You know what I mean? It takes a quick second to get involved with some, but it takes years and years sometimes for you to come up out that lion's den, you know? So just get educated, people, and stay educated about this situation. And like Man Simp said, you know, he got a hell of a story to educate youths and others about that life, you know? So his story is very compelling, you know? I've been knowing him all his life. So any last words, Simp?
I just say, if you're interested in reading about gangster stuff, I got 8 books out. I've written about everybody from the Supreme Team to Fat Cat to Wayne Perry to the Booby Boys. I've done a lot of the feature stories for Don Diva and Feds. You can check out my website. It's at GorillaConvict.com, GorillaConvict.com. I got tons of stuff about prison gangs. That's all I did. I was in prison for 21 years, and basically like my last 11, all I did was interview gangsters, interview prison shot callers, prison gang members, street gang members, mafia dudes. So if you're interested in stuff like that, you can check it out. It's all there. And each and every one of those individuals that I'll talk about that are doing time, they'll tell you at the end of the day, it's not worth it.
My man, and you heard that. It ain't worth it. So if you're listening to this segment right here tonight, and once again, if you're out here trying to be a dope dealer or a gangbanger, you need to reiterate your life and think about it. You dig? Because it only takes one thing, and you get a life sentence. You dig? Or you get a graveyard. So really think about what's happening out here, ladies and gentlemen, and continue getting educated. You dig? So, hey, man, I want to say, man, I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight and laying that good knowledge down, you know, and keep doing what you're doing, my friend. And stay focused like you've been doing ever since you stepped down, you know?
All right, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me.
Oh, without a doubt, my brother. You have a good night, man. Peace and love.
All right. All right. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one. Always. Will the Pill, what's good?
What's up, my brother?
Oh, man, just on here doing the show tonight, man. I seen you was trying to call me, but, you know, I was already on the air, you dig? So what's the good word tonight with you, man?
Say it again.
What's the good word with you tonight?
Oh, man, the good word is keep your head up, man, and be strong.
That's
and
the real talk.
Yourself. Respect your self-image, man, because you are everything.
That's the bottom line. And with that said and did, baby boy, me and you going to go ahead and kick this music segment off like we always do, you dig? So we in the building tonight, you know? We out here. Here we go.
Shazia,
yeah.
Born Da Vinci, Shahid the Great, the Crates, what up, Vans Beats? Let's do it.
Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that train foolishness no more. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that train foolishness no more. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that train foolishness no more. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that train foolishness no more. It's only natural that few heads they be fair. Walking around for miles with their heads up in the clouds. I'm down to earth. Why you been birth to this verse, feeling the labor pains of fame. When my pen burst, cries of emergency, body shaking like an addict. I can't panic, I'm pushing out the raw talent. Sore from calluses as I'm writing in my scroll. The dark side won't stop sucking at my soul. Evidently, I was put here to be legendary, to be remembered on this plane like the great campus. Hard to fix, man. If your brain's in chains, I'm sending these spirits out to touch it through your system. It be like extra, extra. Read all about it. Waiting on the day for God, he gon' sound it. Everybody gon' be dealt with just lay your promise, giving the man with a bet from the tree. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that same foolishness no more. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that same foolishness no more. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that same foolishness no more. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start. I ain't with that same foolishness no more. Yeah. It took a minute, but finally came my time for it. They underestimate my passion and my grind for this. But preparation and opportunity slow success. Don't need to be the best or even work harder. Just make my moves precise because I plan smarter. Keep it 100 business because I'm more than an artist. It's been a curse and a gift ever since the movement started. Cut off a lot of ties because most cats is weak-hearted and can't hold water when they come to catching charges. I'm swift and changeable because it's hard to touch a moving target. It's politics and everything, so I run with bosses, plus a few shooters with murder, land, rocket launchers. We all hustlers, so we trap money and live lawless. Middle fingers to the world, cause I made it regardless. On the way to the top, I hear them all talking. So I'ma wait at the top and make the stars. Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start.
I ain't with that train foolishness no more.
Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start.
I ain't with that train foolishness no more.
Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start.
I ain't with that train foolishness no more.
Hey, yo, I'm at the door. When I hit, I'm gon' start.
I ain't with that same foolishness no more.
Hi. cause they not as fly. I don't always tell the truth, and I ain't gotta lie. If you say the devil made you do it, take your alibi. Yeah, I got to get it, cause it got to get got. They left me for dead, try to leave me to rot. These rappers just can't get, I have been distraught. The stairway to heaven on my way to the top. Yeah, I gotta get it, cause it got to get got. They left me for dead, try to leave me to rot. These rappers just can't, yeah, I have been distraught. The stairway to heaven on my way to the top. First two, it hurts you worse than it hurts me. Now that you see that I'm blessed, you try to curse me. You're looking thirsty on the mic, home and drink some water. God is tending my business, I am my father's daughter. Incinerate the beat, just come and find soda. I'm finna take the lead, just because I got her. What's meant to be, throw my eyes across my teeth. Stand for something, up off of anything, raise up off your knees. Yeah, yeah, and can you raise up off me, please? Tryna stay up on my feet so I can stay up off these streets. Catch me waving in the breeze, I'm blazing up some trees. I got my pad and my feet and I'm amazing, even me. The devil had my life, but then he gave it back to me. Cause he had to, fool, I will smash you, I promise. I'm telling you the truth and I ain't never been honest. Yeah, I got to get it cause it got to get got. They left me for dead, tried to leave me to rot. These rappers just can't, yeah, I have them distraught. The stairway to heaven on my way to the top. Yeah, I got to get it cause it got to get got. They left me for dead, tried to leave me to rot. These rappers just can't, yeah, I have them distraught. The stairway to heaven on my way to the top.
Love, like you say it's love. What's good, people? This is your R&B pop addiction, Deion Price, and I'm rocking with the Streets Don't Love You Back radio show. My new single, Down, is available on iTunes, Amazon, Google Play, and any other online store right now. Go get that. Are you down like you say you down?
Oh.
Getting high like I'm on a flight. Bottle water, and some headed straight to Colorado. I Latin model. Get me feeling like I popped the molly. Man, this life I'm living get me crazy, I know. And you a fool if you don't think I'm getting money, for sure. Yeah, half these niggas in my city lazy. And the other half these niggas pay me. And I'm on top cause I be chasing dreams. You on the bottom cause you chasing fiends. I'm about them commas like a string of beans. I make money, never switching teams. Feel like my life is on the edge of earth. For what it's worth, I'ma ball until I'm in a hearse. It ain't no stopping what I do, I just attack the grand. The devil working while my mother eats my worried man.
Between the papers line. I put my my lifetime in between the papers lines. Brandon's gone, Devin's gone, resting so I'm pacing. Granddad died an honorable mason, a deacon, he was quiet and patient. This feel like when I was listening to underground stations like N.U.R., J.P.Z. on the JVC with a cassette and a deck on pause. My life was put on pause. My lovers were on R&B songs. Mary Jane, for example. How can so much emotion be in just one sample? I'm bopping the beats and pampers, pieces of scragglers and food stampers. Happy with just some new pampers. I liked it better when the chronic was damper. I write like the 90s ethic, walk in the door. Exotic, hypnotic, optic. New heads in the place, be loving it. They want more. It's me they adore, like Prince and Falsetto. I was loving rap mixed with heavy metal. So now my foot's on a steady pedal.
I put my lifetime in between the papers lines. I put my lifetime in between the papers lines. I put my lifetime in between the papers lines. I put my lifetime in between the papers lines. I put my lifetime. I put my life. I put my lifetime. Life. I put my lifetime in between the papers lines.
Help free GI. California Political Prisoner of the Year, Mr. G.I. Johnson, film, TV, and record producer, is campaigning for freedom and justice against a wrongful police shooting, cover-up, and conspiracy. Please join the support with your help and donations by buttons, download, shirts, hats at the freegiproject.org. Your help is very needed. And help free GI. freegiproject.org. The freegiproject.org.
Times on my knees, I look to the sky to rain down on me. Someone heavenly, many nights I wish I could fly to the clouds so I can have a conversation with the Most High. Ask him, where's my girl? The one you made for me to have eternally in my life. Think I found my girl.
You're my angel, baby. You're just like a falling star.
What to do? Got an understanding that my past is my past, and you're trying to make it last with me. Go to the future, baby. You stay down, there's no maybes. That's exactly what it's gonna be.
Waiting on daddy to fly. On them G5 jets, first class flights to cloud 9. With a Prada shoes and a Louis bag, Boussier looking fine. Listening like an angel, so bright she could blind. Any guy with 20/20, she must have fell out. God. I'm so high.
It's a straight out of sky. You came to my life.
you to the Most High.